Start again. Mind you, there is... No, we will start, restart. And this session, again, is another incredibly important session. As Hans said at the beginning, insurance standard will affect every single insurance company in the world in one way, shape or form, and therefore the implementation of the insurance standard IFRS 4 will be very, very important as to how we do it, and therefore the feedback from this group in particular will be very valuable for the team as a whole. Now, on your agenda, you have Andrea Pride, who was supposed to be presenting and helping us with this session. Unfortunately, Andrea is not very well, so her Joanna Yeo, who has also been intimately involved with this project, will be presenting and guiding us through this session. And it made me think, in terms of Joanna presenting, and I shouldn't really say this, but I'm going to. Joanna worked with me many years ago in New Zealand and is a Kiwi, and got me to thinking how many other Kiwis there are in this room. And of course, the ex-vice chair of the board was born and bred in New Zealand, and the to-be-tomorrow vice chair of the board was born and bred in New Zealand. And I know... And the new director of education, I discovered today, was born and bred, well, until he was a teenager, in New Zealand. And there are a couple of other observers who were born and bred in New Zealand. And as Hans says, it's pretty amazing, really, with such a small population. However, on that note, I will shut up and say, Joanna, insurance contracts.
Such a small population in such a big country, and they all want to leave.
No, I'm still there.
Well, thank you very much. Good afternoon. The objective of today's session is to ask for your strategic advice on the questions on the implementation of the new standard on insurance contracts, which is on slide 6. I have a few slides to walk through first to set the scene before I turn it over to you all. The first one is just a brief background on the status of the project. The board has completed largely the decision making on the insurance contracts project. Now this, as some of you know, has been a long term coming. It's one of the longest projects that I think we have on our agenda. We've gone through one discussion paper to exposure drafts. At this stage, staff are busy drafting the standard, and we have just completed a topic-based testing session where particular aspects of the drafts were shared with some to understand whether there were issues of clarification or consistency that needs to be raised. We have two other issues that we expect to bring to the board. The firstly, most importantly, is the effective date of the standard. As per usual, we bring this to the board when the drafting has sufficiently progressed. Obviously, during the drafting process, it is quite common to come up with small issues that turn up. As you put together the jigsaw puzzle, I'd like to explain, you might find out that some pieces need to be refined slightly. And we expect still to bring sweep issues to the board along the way. Bearing all this in mind, the expectation is to publish a new standard in the first half of 2017, and that's why we're here. A few points to note for insurance. I think it's important to step back and see where insurance contracts is today. Today we have a standard called IFRS 4 insurance contracts, which grandfathers largely the requirements that insurers applied prior to coming onto IFRS. And these requirements are diverse between jurisdictions and between entities. So many of these concepts in the new insurance contract standard could be new for some, and implementation will be challenging for many insurance entities. I hasten to note, again, this depends on the entities because, for example, short-term insurance contracts are largely not subject to as much significant change. There are likely to be significant operational implications, like any, when you have new requirements. Now, one important factor about this is that these questions of implementation are largely expected to be actuarial in nature. Our actuarial colleagues are those in those companies that put together the numbers for both solvency reporting and typically financial reporting. Now, entities will be approaching transition from different perspectives. So it depends what they're doing today, what they're doing today for solvency purposes, what they're doing today for even non-GAAP measures. And again, it depends on what contracts they have on their books. And there will be different educational needs between different entities. That is without said. Taking a step back, I'd like to first focus on what overall, what are the toolkits we have for supporting implementation as the IFRS Foundation. So this is a general list of what we typically do when a new important standard is issued. The first one is obviously the standard is issued not in a vacuum, but with important material. Firstly, the basis for conclusions, the illustrative examples, an effects analysis on how the standard will impact, and a project summary and feedback statement. This can also be followed with webcasts introducing the new requirements, and obviously we could drill it down and focus on specific issues, which is often the case. We also typically outreach to our investors and try to explain in a simple but informative way how investors' analysis will be changing. We also put together educational meetings. I mean, all the meetings that we've been doing don't stop, they continue. We meet with regulators, investors, and national standard setters to further on these educational efforts. There could be IFRS conferences to support implementation. I think there's a LISAS one coming up soon. And obviously, we maintain a web page which summarizes all of these activities and materials and allows questions to be raised. There is, in certain circumstances, a transition resource group can also be established to meet specific needs. And that's what slide 5 tries to illustrate a little bit of. Firstly, if you think about a transition resource group, the objective is educational in nature. It is to help develop a further understanding about how to implement the standard. It provides a forum in the public where people can sit and discuss common issues about how to approach issues and how to interpret the requirements. It is educational in nature, I hastened, and not meant necessarily to result in authoritative guidance. Now, I won't go through necessarily the slide in front of you, but there have been two transition resource groups, as you're well aware, that have been established. They have been slightly different in some of the flavors, and that's why we prepared this slide with you. The important question for you today is question 1 and 2 on this slide. And firstly, we'd like to ask your feedback on what steps you think we should be used in that toolkit on slide 4 that could support implementation and consistent application of the new insurance contract standard. And also a more specific question is to do with in relation to a transition resource group.
Thank you, Joanna. I'm now going to open it up, and perhaps we could go back to slide 4, Joanna, so that we've got what the toolbox we have available is in front of us. And really I think there will be a number of people will say everything. However, I think it's really trying to get a feeling from those of you who are there as investors, as preparers, or whichever role it is, in terms of how you think it's really thinking about the users of the standard, how best to help to implement. As Hans said, and Joanna was a little less strong about every single insurance company is going to have some changes. And I sit here, I have to say, as a director of a life insurance company in New Zealand, thinking, now what the hell are we going to do and how are we going to manage it? And what are the things that we will need, or I will need, as help in terms of how to implement the standard? So it's really pleased in terms of the feedback that you give, again, that diverse feedback that we have, that we may give as to where you'd like to put the emphasis in terms of this toolbox, or, and the reasons why when you respond to this. So I am going to throw it open, and Linda, you have... your flag up at the moment, so we'll start off with you.
Okay, thank you, Joanna. Just as background, I represent the Hub Group here, so many of the European, Japanese, Korean, North American companies. I'm also the Group Chief Accounting Officer of Manulife Financial, also known as John Hancock in the US, a large multinational insurer and wealth and asset management company. So I have a little bit of background in this topic. And I would say that I think the feedback that I'm getting, and I personally agree with, is that an implementation group on its own we're too diverse of an industry. We've got short-term contracts, long-term contracts. Some people are using OCI. Some people have more of pass-through products or variable fee contracts. So a implementation group in keeping everyone focused on similar issues will be next to impossible.
Sorry, Linda, you say implementation group.
Oh, sorry.
Do you mean a transition resource group?
Yes, transition resource group. So I think because of the diverse issues, I think what's really more needed is an open discussion with those members of staff that have been involved to try to figure out how we would... how to resolve or how to think through some things. So it's more of an openness.
Okay, we will note that one, and perhaps we'll come back to that and the thoughts around that a bit later. Paul?
Thanks, Joanna. At the risk of disagreeing with Linda, I was going to propose that, and again, I'm coming from an auditing perspective, so thinking about how we deal with similar issues on a global basis from a consistency point of view. I was going to propose that I think a transition resource group, or maybe named something else, would be very useful in that regard. But if in doing that, I would actually take the opportunity as a board to re-emphasise what the goals of that group would be, i.e. in implementation support and not new standard setting, etc. Because I know there was some debate over when the revenue group was in as to whether it was drifting into standard setting and because of the consistency with the FASB, etc. But I think such a group would be very helpful. I think it would give the board an opportunity to re-emphasise what its role is. But I think it should probably, given the specific industry nature of this standard, be set up to pick up on Linda's point of view in consultation with industry representatives such that their views are heard at the table as well. But I would definitely support some kind of group, and whether you rename it to rebadge it as implementation is a different question.
Thank you, Paul, and I think your comments are interesting, and whether Linda, as a Freudian slip, called them implementation groups, because it was interesting when Joanna said that they are there as educational, and I would say from afar that's not necessarily how I have perceived the current ones or the previous ones to have been, that they have perhaps been... thinking about changing the standards, whereas I know that that is exactly what we're not doing. So I think that that may be something to think about. And Sue, did you want to say something?
Yes, Paul, unless I misheard you, I think you said in consultation with industry group members. So who would you think of as the appropriate people to have around the table, given the nature of the group that you're mentioning?
Just to clarify, Sue, I suppose I'm not sure exactly how you do it, but what I was getting at was to make sure that there's preparers at the table as well as auditors and board members. And again, the point I was trying to make, it's a massive standard for the industry in itself, but it is very specific to the industry, obviously, from an insurance point of view, to the large part. So it's just really not necessarily defining, but making sure you've got the cross breadth of preparers, users, investors, auditors, and board, etc.
Thanks.
Colin?
Thanks, Joanna. I'm kind of in the same place as Paul on this one, actually. I think although the insurance standard has been long in the making, I think the fact it's it's evolved and it's changed quite significantly towards the end of its gestation, coupled with the fact it's incredibly complex, I have a bit of I have some concerns that the application may be it may be divergent across different preparers, and clearly one of the main drivers for the new insurance contract standard was to try and improve what is a very divergent playing field at the moment in insurance accounting. I would be very supportive of some sort of transition resources group efforts, given we've got a little bit of time before it will be effective. I think I'm right in saying it's 2021, so I do think there's time for a TRG to be set up to try and make sure that the implementation is consistent, and any of the concerns that I know the industry have regarding how they'll actually implement it in a consistent fashion are addressed.
Okay, thank you, Colin. We seem to have moved straight on to the transition resource group. I don't want to stop discussion around those. However, I do think that if people have got comments on some of the other areas as well, or whether, and even if you do, you're taking those as a given that they will all happen as well, and perhaps some comment on that. But just going on, Micheline, I think you were next.
So I guess if I to comment on slide 4, I guess the material published as part basis for conclusion, illustrative examples, effects analysis, and project summary. I would expect these to be there, and I'm almost wondering why it's on that slide, because for me that's kind of obvious. To a certain degree, I would think they're almost all of interest. In terms of more important to me, I guess as actuaries, like for example, the IFRS conferences based focused on implementation, and the transition resource group. So that's if we're moving to slide 5. I mean, I'm representing the International Actuarial Association, and here I guess we do. Joanna has acknowledged that many of the questions are expected from actuaries. And indeed, actuaries are quite worried and conscious about all the challenges, I guess, that the implementation will cause. And would definitely like to have a group that could help in translating, the accounting knowledge to the actuarial knowledge. I mean, so far there's been a lot of focus on the fairly high-level items, but in the translation itself will require a fair bit of discussion, and not a discussion in terms of changing, but in terms of understanding. And yes, we're probably talking a fair bit of education here, but in doing that translation, what was the real intent behind this, and having on that group fairly very knowledgeable people that have gone through the process of thinking about this, and so either senior staff at the IASB, board members even that were involved in the process, that would be very helpful to have, need we've heard it from actuaries that are involved with preparers as well as auditors as this concern of having a reasonably comparable approach, even if we're coming from different markets and with different products, but again we're also coming from different cultural background in terms of we'll need a fair bit of exchange and discussion to arrive at a product that we'll be proud of at the end.
Thank you for that, and certainly that resonates with me in terms of, effectively, we're not just talking to accountants this time, we're talking to actuaries. And one question that I've got as a result of this, and I haven't really thought about it, but others probably have, will the actuarial standards need to change, either in-country or global actuarial standards as a result of this new accounting standard?
In fact, the International Actuarial Association is looking at creating a model standard. In fact, I am the chair of that group, so you're talking to the right person. And we are working hard in the last few years following the progress of what's been done there to be having something to expose fairly shortly after it's final. So yes, there is I guess we have the same issues as the ISB. We don't have any power. We just have the power to influence. But we do want to propose a model, and we've have done that for on pension so far, for some general standards, and we're hoping that this is also going to be fairly popular, especially in areas where there's no actual standard that would be close enough to be used.
Okay, thank you, and I'm sure the team will take your comments on board there. I had Danita next.
Thanks, Joanna. Skipping to the question of the TRG, and at the risk of disagreeing potentially with my audit client, Linda, I will jump right in and say I think that a TRG would be useful. I guess a question that in my mind would still be open is what the scope of that should be, whether the whole standard should possibly be in scope or whether it should be limited to selected topics. But like Micheline said, I think that the membership ought to be broad. I think it ought to include the preparer community, the investor community, which we really haven't heard from, I think, as much on this project as we would like to, you know, as well as auditors. I think insurance regulators as well as actuaries ought to be represented as also, because the issues are complicated. I mean, one of the issues that would need to be addressed is the whole question of aggregation and at what level should insurance contracts be aggregated. I'm still not sure that we have a common view across industries, the IESB, regulators on that question. So in my mind, that would be one that a TRG could usefully address.
Thanks, Danita. Saskia.
Thank you. We discussed it a little bit internally, and given the complexity of the standard, we believe that's extremely important and welcome that all these things will be extensively done. What we would like to signal is, and I think that is also already signaled by Joanna who presented the slides, is that actually, given that the companies and in the countries the legislation is quite different at the moment under IFRS 4, there should perhaps be a lot of attention to give also more support than usual at local level with involvement of the national standard setters. Then perhaps a few words on the transition resource group. We have been in our letter to the trustees on the structure and effectiveness review quite lukewarm about transition resource groups. We said it should be used in very limited circumstances, but we certainly think that IFRS 17 is one of the cases where there is a clear need for such a group. Like others, we believe that there should be clarity on the status of the group and the interaction both with the ISB and the Interpretations Committee. I think we share the views that were expressed by several here that the transition resource group should include a wider composition. We also had on our list preparers, auditors, actuaries, investors. We believe that those members should come from a wide range of current practices, so a good spread over what is currently done. And then again, like others said, it should be mainly educational, not to create rule-based detailed requirements. So that's again the link with the ISB and the IFRS Interpretation Committee. And the meeting should be in public, and the recommendations should be clear to everybody who followed the debate. Thank you.
Thank you. Gavin.
So probably just echoing some of the comments before, I think what's really important in a new standard like this is the education and the socialisation of many of the ideas and requirements. The sooner that can happen or start happening, the better. That doesn't need to wait for a transition resource group, but I think that's really important. IFRS 9 for me is pretty instructional in terms of, I think, a large part of the power, I guess, of the transition resource group was around the discussion of key issues and providing a forum for that, and you can call it education or whatever you want to, but actually that was as much the power as anything else. Clearly in IFRS 9 for impairment, it's very much around credit risk modellers, trying to understand what the accounting required and required them to do. It's a little different for insurance because actually today insurance accounting, of course, is largely driven by national requirements. It's very actuarially driven in many jurisdictions, and I personally would be a little concerned with letting the actuaries run away with the new insurance accounting standards. So there is a balance here, and it's different dynamics than when I think about IFRS 9 and credit risk modelling, which works much more of a, already a, if you will, a finance or accounting-centric approach under IAS 39. I think it's important, so I think a transition resource group is absolutely inevitable. I would not change its name, because otherwise the ISBL will have yet another body that people will think is different. I think it needs to include a wide range of people who know what they're talking about, but that importantly should include people outside of insurance. Obviously, as a bank, we have a large insurance business, and we will have a large insurance implementation effort. I think what's really important for the transition resource group is to set out a very clear timetable. I would start it sooner rather than later, and I would finish it sooner rather than later. The risk always is that you basically upset preparers' implementation plans, and actually it becomes an impediment to early implementation as opposed to encouraging it. And I'd also spend a lot of time and effort on trying to set out what the agenda and what the key topics for discussion will be. My observation about some transition resource groups is they spend an awful lot of time trying to figure out what the key topics to discuss are. So I think the more thought and process, the more thought that can be put into that ahead of time, the more valuable something like a transition resource group will be.
Thanks, Gavin. Jake.
To your question on this slide, I had a slightly different question. I do think all of these would be valuable. The question that I was pondering is when might these things be valuable? And if you've got a limited amount of resource, I would give some thought to when investors might want to be interacting with this and what information they will need, and that might help you to determine what's most valuable at what time.
Okay, thank you. Stephen.
Yeah, I just wanted to sort of go back to the conversation we had earlier a little bit around the new website. And I just wonder whether we're not exploring enough, whether we can use some form of collaborative or crowd questioning that might assist us in doing this. If we are upgrading that, there's a lot of software out there that allows you to get bigger groups together and collaboratively answer questions and raise issues. It's very, very good at highlighting implementation issues. I know we use these internally and everybody, you know, gets involved. It's probably a younger generation thing, but it's been very successful for us. And I think it's something that should be explored as an addition to just going out for transition resource groups as an alternative way of getting the issues from a much wider group.
Thank you. Very useful suggestion. Wojciech.
Thank you, Joanna. Most comments revolve around the transition resource group, but I would like to acknowledge and welcome the fact that the new standard on insurance contracts will be accompanied by effects analysis, by a standalone effects analysis. This is very welcome, and this will help to build acceptance of the standard among stakeholders. And this is the second time we see a standalone effects analysis. The first was obviously to accompany Liz's standard. It was most useful to us. Thank you.
Thank you. Garth?
At previous meetings, I've expressed my concern about transition resource groups as to what their real purpose is. And if we take, for example, the one for IFRS 15, the impression that I've got is that it was being used by certain groups to ensure that no further changes were likely to be made to the standard so that you got a solid base that can be used. Now, there's a place for that. My concern is that there are a large number of entities, maybe not the major ones, maybe the second tier, whatever it may be the case, who aren't quite as fast in trying to implement standards. And therefore, the fact that the IFRS 15 resource group is largely not being used now is not for any, much help for those entities that are only looking at, for example, IFRS 15 much closer to implementation. And my concern is that will the same apply to a transition resource group for insurance? Helpful for certain major entities who are very quick off the mark, but less helpful for those smaller entities that have less resources and who are looking more for the educational aspects that might or could be used by for the transitional resource group.
Thank you, Garth. Ton.
The securities regulators and enforcers, we are always concerned about consistent application of standards. In this respect, the starting point for most of the insurance companies is very different because they are now applying the local accounting standards related to insurance contracts. That means that the departure point of the different companies is very different, which increases the risk of inconsistent implementation of IFRSs. So it was already mentioned several times, transition resource groups are very important in this respect to help insurance companies to understand the impact of the new standard. If I look to the number of proposals made here on the slide, I was wondering why investor perspectives, articles, educational meetings with investors would contribute to the consistent application. I believe those activities are very important, but I was wondering what is exactly the relationship with the consistent application, because consistent application is a matter of how do you implement the standard as if you have to account for in insurance contracts. I believe because of the move from local GAAP to IFRS for the accounting of insurance contracts, it might be useful if there will be web-based applications in which insurance companies explain how they approach this move, because then others could take advantage of those ideas. A last point I would like to refer is something we saw happening in the area of the move from the incurred loss model to the expected credit loss model. A lot of institutions come in with their guidance, for example, the Basel Committee, we saw EBA, we see doing, the ECB is planning. I think it's very important the ISB is fully aware of all those possible guidance that might be implemented, that might be published, that might be and that might be risky that local standard setters will come up with guidance. We have to discourage those entities to come up with this guidance, because then otherwise we run the risk that there will be a local, more local implementation, or a mere prudential implementation of the accounting standard, instead of in the interest of transparency and investor protection. Thank you.
Thank you, Tone. Marcus.
Thank you, Joanna. So, first of all, how can I start after 17 years? I'm still cautious that it's finalized, but more or less the discussion convinced me that it will be. So, talking about the implementation, I think from a tactical perspective for your organization, it is a necessity to establish a transition resource group while you will be compared by insurers vis-a-vis banks. And so they got one, they will, insurers, if they don't get one, it's an awful situation. On the scope, is it about implementation, or is it about changing the standard after it has been finalized? That's the basic question. It should be about implementation. And having said that, I come to the relationship to all your efforts you have on slide 4. My guess would be that within this transition resource group, you will talk about specific cases, specific examples. And I'm wondering how you bring in those examples into your illustrative examples, which will be published before. So that will be an issue maybe you have to think about.
Linda, did you want to come back in?
Listening to this conversation, sitting here thinking I might be alone with the transition group, but I would like to add a few comments that I've heard and completely agree with. We do have to make sure that we protect against local jurisdictions making local rules. I don't think a transition group will help that, but I think it is part of the IASB when we publish this to re-emphasize that it's a global standard and therefore needs to be consistently adopted globally, and we do not want like one-off interpretations. The other point that I really liked was that we're all starting from a different spot, and that will make us looking at the rules from we'll all be looking at it differently, and we've all been trying to get our head around what does this mean to us going from here to here. And when you have a group of people that are all coming at it from a different angle, that makes the conversation extremely difficult to to facilitate, and extremely difficult to get that out. I think we all need to learn to do that. I think the IASB has been doing that over the last few years, trying to get all these different issues started. But I think that will actually not make a transition group very effective, because we'll all be looking at it from different personal perspectives. So just my other point. I'd also look at what else exists in the world to make sure that we have a consistency in standards. And I know we're all not part of the Big Four, but the Big Four do, right? Like we know now on some of the things that all the local or territories then talk to their hub, and they all have insurance working groups. And we know once a month those four meet. So there's a lot of other things in there that will ensure that at least for some there is some consistency, and some issues have been thought through. But probably more importantly, those guys will be then issuing and doing seminars and stuff to help disseminate what this means or that means, or give points of view. So a lot of education still has to be done, not only from the IFRS, but a number of other parties. So I think we need to look at that as well. So let's just add.
Okay, thank you everybody for your participation and ideas there. I'm going to try to summarize what I think I have heard, and then ask for comments from Joanna and maybe Hans and or Sue if they would like to make comments. I think overall, what I have heard, obviously there are diverse views, which is exactly what we wanted. But however, one thing where I think there is a general consensus is that a TRG of some sort is essential. And I deliberately say some sort because I think there have been a number of things raised, Linda raised, we're all at different starting points. There are a whole load of more groups potentially than have previously been engaged, the actuaries in particular, the regulators, the fact that there is, most of the people are coming from areas where there is local jurisdiction around insurance accounting, which is largely solvency type standards. Around most of the world, and therefore the scope of any transition resource group and the membership and what are the key items, I think, has come out from the discussion is absolutely key to setting that. And I think one of the other things that I picked up particularly around this is that, of course, there will be others, whether it's local jurisdictions or it's the big firms, who will be issuing guidance. And somebody made the comment, be aware of it. I wrote down, manage it, but I think that's probably the wrong word, and I then wrote liaise. So I think that's the key, to work together, that everybody is in this together. So about trying to get, you know, who is interested in this is all in it together about getting the accounting standards, insurance accounting standard, to be applied or implemented the best way possible in whichever jurisdiction it is. So it's a question of all collaborating and working together, I think is what's gone out. And I think there have been a couple of comments about whether the, in terms of it's that all of the things that are up on the board are essential in one way, shape or form. It's pulling them together, acting sooner rather than later. But one thing that perhaps isn't up there is how we can use the new website and collaborative online type engagement that perhaps hasn't been done by the ISB before. And that is perhaps a new way to think about how doing these, some of these things. And it may be how we can bring in some of the local aspects, and somebody in New Zealand comparing with how do I do it compared to somebody in another country or whatever it may be. So those are the key things that I think I pulled out of the comments, and I think probably Gavin's words about, you know, it's all about education and socialisation, and I think the use of that word, it's socialisation and people getting comfortable with what we're doing, and that that can start sooner rather than later. The other thing I also noticed, Garth's comment in particular around making sure that we don't stop something once the big entities have applied, that the resource, the assistance for implementation is there for perhaps later adopters. So that's my summary of what I've heard. I'm sure I haven't got it totally right from what came around the room, but I think that's the messages that I got. And Joanna, Hans, Sue, I'm not sure who wants to comment first or make any comment.
I think what this shows is the real need to have educational guidance or educational activities after the standard is issued, yeah, considering the fact that people are coming from different starting points. And I think the local issue was mentioned quite a few times, and I think we will need to carefully consider how that we could, you know, perhaps try to be more effective, because I think one of the challenges that was spoken many times is the differences that exist between jurisdictions and companies today, even within the same jurisdictions, and also these other pressures coming along. I think the other thing that was clear to me was the timeliness of this. You know, we really need to consider all of this. There's a list of things which people support, but actually, what is the timing? What should be issued earlier, what should be issued later. And what was very clear in this transition resource group that was also clear to me was that it should support implementation through educational efforts, and it shouldn't derail implementation by putting through rule-based, perhaps, pronouncements and so on and forth. But it will be a really tricky thing of balancing, I think, very complex and diverse needs from the actuarial community to the investors, which were mentioned, as well to the preparers and the regulators.
Sue or Hans or both?
The only surprise for me was Linda, who didn't want a TRG as a preparer. I didn't see that one coming.
She wants more, though.
Yeah. Well, so let's see. All I can say is that I think this discussion did not come one moment too soon, because the time is almost there that we have to start with this. And what this discussion made clear to me is that we have to be very clear about the format, about putting discipline around the process and make and expectation management to our constituents. So I really think that we need to make a very precise plan as to how to go forward. And I don't know how far the staff has already, obviously they have been thinking about this a lot, but I think this discussion was very useful in the sense that, well, it's clear that there will be a massive demand for educational activities of one sort or another. I am not sure if we have a clear picture for ourselves yet exactly how we're going to do that, and I think we need to do some more precise thinking about it. And let's take the suggestions for different new formats online, whatever. Let's take that on board. TRG, not completely supported, but widely supported. That in itself is no surprise. So yes, this can help us forward.
And I certainly think that you talking about a plan, I think that is really important. So whether it's a plan, a matrix, a framework where they all fit in, and so people can see the various different bits that are going to support at different times, I think that's really, really important, and that comes out sooner rather than later I'm hearing.
I think probably the moment that we publish the standard, we should also on our website make clear how we are going to deal with implementation.
Sue, any comment from you?
I guess one of my main takeaways, and I'm not surprised by it because it's probably the topic we've had the most discussions on internally for those of us who have been thinking about this already, is if we did have a group, what its scope and what its focus should be, because I think we probably spent the most time thinking about that on IFRS 9, the fact that we limited it to impairment, the fact that we made sure that the people around the table had credit risk expertise rather than pure accounting expertise. And I think one of the particular things we need to go away and think about with the help of the useful input we've got today is if we did have a group, how we'd draw the line on this one, because what we very consciously didn't do with the IFRS 9 group was start talking about how to calculate expected credit losses. We always try to focus in on what's the objective of the measurement, what's the standard telling you to shoot for, and not get into the numbers. And I think that same thinking needs to go on internally in terms of where we draw the line.
Any comments or questions from other board members of the group here that's going to help you in terms of moving forward? No? Okay, any final word from anybody before we wrap up this session? No, in which case I think it has been very valuable, and getting the variety of feedback, although reasonable consistency, but that in itself is really important to know, that I hope has been valuable, and we look forward to both the publication of the standard and the publication of the plan for implementation. So thanks very much, Joanna, for standing in and presenting that for us and for everybody's contribution. We are now going to break for lunch. Lunch is, as we said, downstairs. It's in the Forum restaurant, which if you go downstairs and you go that way, if you walk down the stairs, it's turn where you have to go. Well, anyway, the staff will tell you where it is and you'll find it. And we are due back here at 2:30. Okay, so 2:30, please, back here. Thanks very much.